Welcome to the Listen Lounge, where the sounds of smooth jazz meet the chilling screams of murder. Reservation for Murder, a Kyle Callahan mystery. It's been several years since Kyle Callahan sought the help of a New York City therapist to overcome the trauma of his encounter with a serial killer, and it's been just as long since his investigation into a teenage girl's murder brought down the Manhattan District Attorney. He and his husband, Danny Durbin, have decided to move away to start a new life in the idyllic river town of Lambertville, New Jersey. They open a bed and breakfast and soon discover that murder and mayhem are waiting to check in. There's a writers' conference in town, with big names and big egos heading for a clash and a killing of titans. No sooner has the ink dried on the guest registry than Kyle finds himself pursuing another murderer, this one closer to home than they've ever come.
Reservation for Murder, a Kyle Callahan mystery. Written by Mark McNeese. Narrated by Sean Reed. Part 1. A New Beginning. Prologue. Dear David, thank you so much for the birthday card. The big 6-0. I remember thinking at 25 how old 40 would be, and now 40 seems young and distant. Young because I wish I had the energy I had at that age, and distant because it is. The idea of 20 years shortened by fading memories into a slideshow of the past 2 decades is hard to express, and you and I had known each other so many years by then. I hope you and Elliot are finding Los Angeles to your liking. How is his father's health? Moving there to take care of him was an amazing thing to do. I know from our conversations it was a difficult but necessary decision. My mother and her second husband, Farley, are in Scottsdale now, and I can't imagine moving there to take care of her if anything happened to him. We would if we had to, of course, but why ponder these things at all? It's like expecting heartache or anticipating the things we dread most. For you and Elliot, I hope only that you like it there and that you're happy. The new grandchild helps, I'm sure, and having Elliot's son in Santa Barbara has to be a plus. I always knew you'd find the man of your dreams, for who is that but the one who brings us contentment? And you did. We both did. And we're both at a time of life that's changing, new, exciting, and more than a little frightening. We're leaving New York City at last. We've been driving back and forth to Lambertville for the past few months, getting the apartment ready to sell, and, to be honest, dragging our feet just a bit. New York has been my home since I moved here with you all those years ago, and for Danny, even longer. But everyone's gone now. We seem to be the last 2 people on the train. His parents moved to Florida 2 years ago. Shoot me if I ever suggest it. My beloved boss, Imogene, has packed up and flown the coop, teaching now in Santa Clarita. She has a sister there. Margaret Bowman passed away last Christmas. We went to both memorial services, one in Fort Lauderdale, where she'd made so many friends, as Margaret was bound to do, and one here at the restaurant. You should have seen the crowd. The previous 2 mayors were there, along with celebrities, a few icons in the New York restaurant business, you name it. She got the send-off she deserved. And a week later, we decided it was time to move. To face the sadness of leaving our home for a new one, but also to embrace the adventure. We sold Margaret's passion to Chloe Sparks. You remember her. She was the best assistant Danny ever had running the restaurant, and a fine woman. It's called Chloe's Gramercy Park now, and it's a success. What else would it be? We've kept the building for the income from the tenants. But the restaurant is all Chloe's, and we're very proud of her. At last, the apartment has been sold, and we have to vacate this week. Sad? Yes. Regrettable? Not at all. We've had our bed and breakfast, Passion House, in operation for 2 months. It's a huge learning curve with no end in sight, but I like that. I'm out of the TV business. My friends, including you, have all moved on, and I love Lambertville. New Jersey is such a beautiful state, and the Delaware River Valley is spectacular. I wish you'd seen it before you moved, but I also know you'll visit. Soon? Summer is your favorite season, and a great time to see such a beautiful town. I'll let you go now. I so enjoy our letters. No one writes them anymore. Everything's email and text. I do plenty of that, too, but old-fashioned letter writing is something to savor. I'll write you next from our home in Lambertville. We've got a big week coming up with a convention in town, and Passion House is booked solid. I'm happy. Danny's happy. Our new kitty, Wilma, is happy. God rest Smelly's little cat soul. We miss her still. And I don't imagine I'll be running into any serial killers in Lambertville. I've enjoyed the past few years without them, and if I never encounter another one, it'll be too soon. That was the old life. This is the new one. Give my love to Elliot. Our best room is yours anytime, on the house. Or should I say, on Passion House. I think Margaret would be happy we named it that, and I know Danny is. Until we write again. Love, Kyle. Chapter 1. Kyle Callahan stood by the apartment doorway, staring at what now seemed like vast emptiness. The movers had finished 10 minutes ago and were already on their way out of the city. "We have to go," he said to his husband, Danny Durbin. "We're meeting them at Passion House and we need to be there." "You don't have to state the obvious," Danny replied. Kyle knew the move was even harder on Danny than it was on him. The apartment had been Danny's long before he met Kyle 13 years ago. Kyle and his cat Smelly had moved in from their home in Brooklyn. They'd been the new members of a family that had previously consisted only of Danny and his cat Leonard. It hadn't taken long either. The men had been dating for 3 months when they decided to combine households, and that household had just been sold. They were vacating because they no longer owned it, and the new residents were coming the next day. All the empty space Kyle was looking at, freshly painted, scrubbed, cleansed of their presence, had held memories until this very moment. Now, those memories were ghosts who had to leave with them. The furniture and belongings they decided to keep would still provoke the same sentiments. The coffee cups Kyle bought from every place they'd traveled, Danny's awards for his years in the restaurant business. But they would not be housed in the same place. They, like their owners, were being uprooted by choice and planted in new ground. "Are we doing the right thing?" asked Danny, standing next to Kyle, with only the front door between them and their new life. Danny was shorter than Kyle by 6 inches and just a little over a year older. Kyle had fallen in like the first night they'd met at a dating event, and within weeks, the like had turned to something close to love, or at least the anticipation of it. They were both 13 years older now, and their added age, along with their height difference, was something Kyle never noticed except in photographs. "There is no wrong thing, Danny. Everyone's gone. Some of them have left the planet. Time only goes in one direction, and we're going with it. Let's be excited." "I am excited. It's just hard. All those years in one place. This isn't just change. It's upheaval. I'm a city boy moving to the country. Who would have ever guessed that?" Kyle put his arm around Danny. "Lambertville is not the country. Linda and Kirsten live in the country," he said, referring to their friends who had a small house in the woods outside Stockton, New Jersey. "We're moving to a fabulous, artistic, vibrant town we both love, and we already live there." The couple had been traveling back and forth the past 3 months between Lambertville, where they'd already opened their bed and breakfast, and Manhattan, where leaving had not been an overnight proposition. There had been the restaurant to deal with, the building they owned, and 1,000 details that had to be dealt with when settled lives moved from one place to another. "We should go," Kyle said gently. He sensed Danny was crying silently, just a tear or two. "Joy and grief are not mutually exclusive," Kyle said. "Remember, when one door closes..." "Oh, for God's sake, I hate that expression," Danny said. "I know you do. That's why I said it." The mood had lifted slightly, and Kyle knew it was time. He turned and opened the door, taking in yet another view he would not see again, the hallway. They'd known their neighbors and their neighbors' children and pets all in this hallway, on the other floors and in the lobby. Life in a New York City apartment building was a microcosm of the city itself, teeming with personalities and lives, grand and small. A moment later, they were outside the apartment. Kyle handed Danny the key. "Here, you should be the one to do this." Danny nodded. He took the key and locked the door. A short elevator ride later, they were at the front desk. Danny gave their key to Freddy, the morning shift doorman.
"You'll be back," Freddy said,
trying to put the best face on a goodbye that was hard for the staff, too. Doormen, porters, handymen, the super. Some of them spend their entire working lives in one building. They see new apartment owners settle in. They see the tenants' children grow up. They see the old ones die. And they see some of them leave. "No, Freddy," said Kyle. "We won't. But I appreciate the thought. We're going to miss you, too. Tell your wife I want some of those cakes for the bed and breakfast."
"You serious, Mr. Callahan?"
"Of course we are," Danny chimed in. "Nobody makes cakes like Loretta. We want them for our guests. How else can we make sure they come back? Now, here." He pressed the key into Freddy's palm. "We'll call you in a few weeks to say hello. Tell Loretta to preheat the oven." Freddy got up from behind the desk. He looked around nervously, as if he didn't want to violate any rules, then hurried to Kyle and Danny and hugged each of them.
"You'll be missed, really," he said.
"You will be too," Kyle replied. "Remember, any time you and Loretta need a nice getaway, Passion House is yours."
"That's too kind. We'd love that."
Kyle knew Freddy would never take him up on it. It had been hard just getting people from Manhattan to come to Brooklyn when he lived there. The island was the center of the known universe for most people who lived on it. He knew doormen seldom resided in the city, but they were still city people. Lambertville might as well be Petticoat Junction to them. That's how he and Danny thought of it, until their first visit. Love at first sight had changed their minds. A moment later, they were in their car, a Toyota they'd purchased for their new life. You don't need a car in New York City, but life outside is nearly impossible without one. Then came the drive across town, a short delay into the Lincoln Tunnel, out the other side, and off into their new life. Chapter 2. Passion House Bed and Breakfast was originally built as a single-family home in 1929 by one of Lambertville's wealthiest residents. Noah Habermeyer had been a German immigrant who'd settled first in Newark, New Jersey, before finding the city too large and sinful and moving his family to the smaller river town. Noah was known for his religious piety and his capitalism, demonstrating an equal conviction for both. Prayer and profit were sacred to the father of ten, and in Lambertville, he found the perfect place to start a general, mercantile store that would later spread throughout the northeastern states and presumably make the Habermeyer heirs comfortable for life. Changing trends in technology saw the collapse of his retail empire, resulting in the eventual destitution of many of his grand and great-grandchildren, who, by the time Kyle and Danny bought the house, had been forced to work for a living, and in most cases, leave the area. Located on the Delaware River, in the southwestern part of Hunterdon County, and now technically a city, Lambertville had undergone several transformations. During the 18th century, local places were sometimes named after operators of ferries taking travelers across the river into Pennsylvania. Once known as Coryell's Ferry, after the ferry owner, Emanuel Coryell, the community was renamed Lambertville in 1814 in honor of John Lambert, another famous resident, who'd served as United States Senator and acting governor of New Jersey. In more recent times, Lambertville was not considered much of a place to be or visit, but during the 1990s, the town began sprouting art galleries, antique shops, restaurants, and more than its share of charm. Kyle and Danny first visited Lambertville when they were staying for a long weekend with their friends, Linda Sikorsky and Kirsten McClellan. Linda had been a police officer for the New Hope, Pennsylvania Police Department, making her way up to detective over the course of a 20-year career. She'd met the men 7 years ago when she had investigated a murder at Pride Lodge, a popular LGBT resort in the area. They became fast friends, and when Linda retired, moving to a small house in the New Jersey countryside, just 20 minutes from Lambertville, Kyle and Danny became regular house guests. By then, Linda had met and fallen in love with Kirsten, once a local real estate powerhouse, and now an author writing mysteries in the woods, while her wife ran a vintage everything store in New Hope. The two couples could often be seen eating in their favorite restaurants in both towns and walking across the bridge that connected them. Approximately a year ago, Kyle and Danny began having conversations about getting older and what, if anything, they wanted to change in their lives. So many of the people they knew and loved had moved on or passed away. Manhattan had begun to feel like a ghost town of 8 million living souls. Their restaurant, Margaret's Passion, had been Danny's other true love, but with its founder and namesake dead, his heart wasn't in it anymore. "We need to do something," Kyle had said one night over dinner at home. "Go somewhere." The thought of leaving New York had been preposterous just months before. Danny had lived there all his life, and Kyle had been there for almost 40 years. But now, suddenly, it felt like the past. Kyle was staring at his 60th birthday coming at him full speed, and Danny had already gotten there. Why not make a move? Why not roll the dice at least one more time? They'd gambled on buying the restaurant and the building it was in. They'd taken a chance living together with the highest hopes, but nothing guaranteed, at least in the beginning. That had worked out spectacularly well. All of it had worked out. So when they were walking around Lambertville on another visit to see Linda and Kirsten, a for sale sign in a yard caught their attention. The house was huge. 3 stories with a large yard and a wraparound porch. It was also very run down. Someone kept the lawn and landscaping up, but that was to be expected in a town that considered it a civic responsibility. There was also a small guest house in back, which Kyle later learned had been built for servants at a time when it was common for rich people to have them. Kyle had a vision in the moment, standing on the porch, peering into the empty rooms. A bed and breakfast. "You're out of your mind," Danny had said. "And let's get off the porch. Somebody might be home." "Nobody's home," said Linda from behind them. All 4 of them were now staring through the large front window. "No one's lived here for years. I think the family still owns it. Or maybe the bank. You'd have to call the real estate agent to find out. But I bet you can get it for a steal." Danny saw her smile and knew a plot had been hatched then and there to convince him to embark on one of the biggest adventures and risks of his life. That had been in August of the previous year. They transformed the nearly dilapidated one-time mansion into Passion House, a bed and breakfast that was fully operational by the time they left their apartment in the city for the last time. By springtime, it was staffed, bringing in income and challenging them on a daily basis. Kyle loved it, and he saw that Danny loved it too. It had given them new life and new direction. They lost their beloved cat, Smelly, to age and infirmity. Their other cat, Leonard, was still going strong, and they'd gone as far as to adopt a new one named Wilma. Leonard didn't seem to mind the new feline in the family, which had been as important as their own reaction to her. And this week, 2 months after opening, they had their biggest booking yet. 3 of the 5 rooms were already occupied, thanks to a reduced weeknight rate, and the 2 upstairs suites were booked for arrival the next day. Counting the guests on his fingers, Danny had said, 9 people in our house at the same time. That's really scary. That's really successful, Kyle had replied as he drove through Flemington. It was a trip they'd made dozens of times, but would not be making again, except when they wanted to visit old friends or spend a day in the city. We'll be fine. We've got Justin and Patty, and we live in the guest house. We don't have to spend time with any of them, except for breakfast and if they need anything. The guest house had been a godsend. They'd first thought of living on the 3rd floor, but then decided, after talking to other bed and breakfast owners, that making their home in another location would be a sanity saver. Luckily, They had an option, and they'd made the small guest house as comfortable as their apartment had been, minus all the clutter they'd cleared away when they'd moved. "This is a turning point for us with Passion House," Kyle had said. "If we're booked up once, we'll be booked up again and again. Stop fretting. We can do this." Danny had sighed. He knew Kyle was right. If they hadn't believed they could succeed, they never would have taken the chance. This would be the real beginning of their new life. When they bought the house, it was an abandoned mansion in disrepair. The dark green exterior paint had been peeling for many seasons. The front porch had two lights that hadn't had working bulbs in them for years, and the guest house looked more like an especially large shed whose windows were too grimy to see through. They purchased the property from the bank, which had foreclosed on it 2 years earlier, from the last remaining Habermeyer, a woman named Grace, who lived in Texas and had stopped making payments on a loan against the house. That was how they got it for such a good price, allowing them to invest an additional $35,000 into renovating it. The house went on from being what its neighbors had called an eyesore to a beautiful, interesting, new bed and breakfast with the unusual name Passion House. "It kinda sounds like a place where senators meet their mistresses, or people stay to indulge their sexual fantasies." Danny had bristled at Kyle's comment. "It's named after Margaret's passion, and it's our new passion. I can't be bothered with other people's interpretations, and neither should you." He'd been right, and Kyle had quickly let go of his concerns over the name. Passion House it would be, and Passion House it was when the final touches were added and the gorgeous, hand-painted wood sign was planted in the front yard. The house had 5 guest rooms, 3 on the first floor and 2 on the second. The rooms on the second floor had been turned into suites by combining smaller rooms the original inhabitants had probably used for sewing or reading. The third floor was off-limits to guests and included 2 rooms for the live-in staff as well as space for storage and supplies. The suites had themes. One was the Manhattan suite with the mural of the New York City skyline on one wall, a sleek glass fireplace and furnishings of chrome and glass that reflected a modern feel. Kyle had thought it was incongruous, given their new location, but he knew Danny had wanted something to remind him of the life they'd known, a way of preserving it as the memories faded over time, so he'd said nothing when the mural was painted. Walls could always be painted again. A second suite, called Margaret's Room, had been designed with Margaret Bowman in mind. Danny remembered her apartment above the restaurant, and he'd had the room furnished as if it belonged to everyone's favorite old aunt. It included a large, comfortable, overstuffed chair, a faux fireplace, and an Afghan Margaret had given to Danny when she moved to Florida. There was a mural of the Delaware River Valley on one wall and rustic furniture that made the guests feel as if they were staying in the woods somewhere not far from the river. The standard rooms downstairs were all comfortable and tastefully decorated to reflect the kind of life you find in a quaint river town. Unlike most bed and breakfasts, each room had a small flat-screen TV. Danny and Kyle had the habit of watching TV when they slept, allowing it to shut off with a timer at the 1 o'clock a.m. hour. They never stayed where there was not a television, and Danny said the guests who didn't want one could simply leave it off. There were 2 shared bathrooms on the first floor, complete with a tub and shower, while each room upstairs included a private bath. They'd hired a local jack-of-all-trades named Chip McGill to do some of the heavier renovations on the house, along with 2 men he'd paid to help him. One of them, a gay man in his late 20s named Justin Stritch, had subsequently taken the job of live-in handyman, moving into one of the third-floor rooms. Justin had been a drifter by his own admission, having lived in several states since being rejected by his religious parents and banished as a teenager to live on the streets of Philadelphia. He'd survived well enough, moving around the country and finally settling in Lambertville, where he'd lived with 2 roommates for the past year, doing odd jobs and handyman work. Kyle and Danny knew he might not stick around, given his history, but he was smart, reliable, hardworking, and eager to be part of this new adventure. The other live-in staff was a woman named Patty Langley. Originally from Lambertville, Patty had lived in Frenchtown, then Stockton, and even the big city of Princeton, finally coming back to her home turf a year ago. In her years serving other people, she'd been a nanny, a maid, a personal assistant, and an aide to a succession of elderly clients. They'd found her through a referral from one of their many new friends in town, and, as promised, she had proven to be exceptionally conscientious, if not very friendly. By early April, they were ready to open for business, and Passion House was birthed. The first week, they had 3 guests in 2 of the rooms. The second week, 4. By their 1-month anniversary in May, they were getting enough bookings to think they might just pull this off. And now, as they returned from their last trip to Manhattan as residents, they were full to capacity and nervous. Everything needed to go right. No plumbing crises, no leaking roof, no conflict between guests. They discovered that most people staying in a bed and breakfast got along fine, but once in a while, there were personality clashes, usually solved by the guests in question avoiding each other. They hoped for none of that this week as they pulled into the driveway, got out of their car, and headed for the only home they had now. Chapter 3. Scott Harris was excited about the trip. He hadn't been back to Lambertville in 5 years and had not expected to return. He didn't dislike the town. He had just had enough of it growing up there, then staying as his 20s passed, his 30s, and finally his 40s. He'd always had what he thought of as bigger dreams, although he'd never been able to define those dreams beyond getting rich, famous, or some combination of both. When he found himself working at a grocery store, a middle-aged man slicing meat and cheese for impatient octogenarians, he decided his life was over and dreams were for the foolish. Then, one day, a handsome older man, which at Scott's age meant in his 60s, number 42 from the ticket machine they used to serve customers, asked for a 1/2 pound of Vermont yellow cheddar. Scott looked up at the person who'd placed the order. His eyes met those of Harold Summit, and love arced over the deli counter, striking them each in the heart. That Harold, who was rich and sort of famous, the author of a series of thrillers set in Los Angeles, made Scott rethink the death of his dreams. Maybe they'd just been on life support, and Harold was the experimental treatment they needed. Harold, never a bashful man, wrote his cell phone number down on a business card and exchanged it for his bag of cheese. Scott's manager, Daphne, was on duty that day. Fearful of being scolded for flirting with the customer, Scott discreetly tucked the business card into his apron and nodded politely at Harold, telling him to have a nice day. A last smile was exchanged as Harold wheeled his grocery cart around and walked slowly toward the dairy department. Later that evening, Scott could not believe his luck. The business card read, "Harold Summit, author, lecturer, man of letters." Then, as if one subtitle were not enough, it added in italics, "The Connor Dark novels." Not mysteries, not thrillers, but novels. Hoping Summit was not as pretentious as his calling card, Scott dialed the number. What followed was a 2-hour-long conversation with Harold that left them aching for more. Harold was visiting Lambertville for old time's sake. He'd lived there for many years before moving to Manhattan a decade ago to pursue his career as a writer, with a second move to Los Angeles more recently. "I could have written from anywhere," Harold said, "but I wanted to be in the thick of it, you see. I needed to feel the city, to smell it. The bustle of Times Square, the stench of Hell's Kitchen. My character Connor lives there, and it seemed I really should, too. It's best to write about places you know intimately, you understand?" Scott nodded, as if Harold could see him through the phone. He noticed Harold had mentioned his fictional antihero as if he were a living person, but he gave it little thought, assuming writers and artists were just odd that way. "The series was a smashing success, as you know." Actually, Scott didn't know. He never read a Connor Dark novel, but planned to remedy that immediately. "I came back to visit friends in the city, and we decided to spend a few days at Pride Lodge. I went to the grocery store for some provisions. I'm not one to eat every meal out." Scott knew where Pride Lodge was, just a few miles outside New Hope. He had availed himself of their large, popular swimming pool in the summer, but never stayed there. "Back to the city?" asked Scott. "I thought you lived there."
I'm in Los Angeles now, came the reply. For the past 2 years, developing movie ideas and plans for a Connor Dark TV series. It's in pre-production. Scott's heart sank. This wonderful man, this cultured, talented, wealthy man, was from the other side of the continent. So why had he bothered flirting with Scott? Was he looking for a one-night fling while he strolled memory lane in his old hometown? Something to tell his friends about around a game of Monopoly? I've never been to Los Angeles, Scott said, hoping he didn't sound as disappointed as he felt. Then you must come. I must? I insist. But I work in a deli. It would take me months to save up the money for a trip. Taking the risk, he added, will you wait for me? I could probably swing it by October. There's no reason to wait, Scott. Money is not an obstacle. They were words Scott had never heard before. But I've always paid my way. I'm a proud man, and you can stay that way. I need an assistant. I have no interest in the pretty young things one so often finds at the side of old men. Older, Scott said. He heard Harold laugh over the phone. I'm not the pompous ass you might think from the business card. It's meant to be playful, even if I'm the only one playing. It also creates an appearance, when appearances and bullshit are half the game. I don't say older when I'll be 67 in a month. I'm not as frightened by my own mortality like so many people you meet. I'm old, Scott, and unashamed of it. Now, let's cut to the chase, as they say. I'd like to have dinner with you. We can go Dutch if it's important to you, and then I'd like to talk about your first trip to L.A. I'll need to interview you in my own environment, so to speak. Interview me? Scott asked. Is that what you want to do? He felt himself smiling. I'm sure you'll get a call back, Harold replied. So what do you say? What Scott wanted to say was, when's the next flight? Instead, he said, I'll think about it, Mr. Summit. Mr. Summit. I like that, but only in public if you take the job. In private, you can call me Harold. I might call you 42, Scott replied. 42? That was your number at the deli. Call me whatever you'd like to. Just say yes. I have to think about it, Scott said, not needing to think about it at all. I'll let you know over dinner. When, where, and what time? The following night, they had an incredible meal at Marsha Brown in New Hope, which Scott allowed Harold to pay for. Complete with an excellent red wine and a bill for over $200, it provided evidence for Scott that money was indeed not an obstacle. 5 years, 3 novels, and a canceled television series later, they were back in Lambertville. Scott had moved to L.A. 2 months after meeting Harold. He'd accepted the job as the personal assistant to Mr. Summit, and, 2 years later, as his husband. He'd also learned that Harold wasn't so unconcerned about being old that he didn't team up with a younger writer named Bradley Manning to accompany him to industry meetings. He might not have a problem with his age, but the money men and women of Hollywood weren't so accepting. They were in town for a conference of the Mystery Authors Alliance being held at the Lambertville Station Restaurant and Inn. Harold maintained memberships in a half dozen professional organizations, and MAA was one of them. The conference moved around from year to year, attempting to please a membership that included writers from all 50 states. It was pure coincidence they'd chosen a river town in New Jersey that had once been home to both Harold and Scott. Harold loathed staying in the hotels and convention centers where the meetings were always held, so they'd booked one of the suites at a new bed and breakfast in town. Passion House, Scott had said when he was looking for a place to stay. That's an intriguing name. And it's run by a gay couple. Harold was accustomed to letting Scott make all the arrangements. That's what a personal assistant does. I like the name. Who doesn't need a little passion? Scott called that day and booked the room, making them the final guests in a full house. He'd spoken to Kyle Callahan, one of the owners, when he'd made the reservation. He could have done it online, but preferred talking to human beings. That was 3 weeks ago. Now, after a flight to Newark, a car rental, and an hour's drive, they were parked in front of Passion House, early but pleased. The house looked marvelous.
Scott gazed up at the second floor, where he'd been told their suite was, and wondered which window would be theirs. "We're here," he said, reaching over and gently shaking Harold in the passenger seat. Harold opened his eyes, adjusting back to consciousness. It had been a long day, and he was ready for a power nap, followed by a stroll through town.
"Do you think they'll let us check in early?" Harold asked, unbuckling his seatbelt.
"They always do," Scott replied, "once they realize who you are."
"And if they don't know, I'm sure you'll tell them."
"It's my job, 42. Harold did not like being called 42, but he'd humored Scott for the past 5 years. He truly loved the younger man, having come to think of him as incredibly efficient and committed, offering a devotion Harold had not always returned. There had been dalliances, as there probably would be until Harold was no longer capable of performing or interested in other men. Scott had turned a half-blind eye, and in exchange, Harold had provided him with an extremely good life. They exited the car, Scott circling around to the trunk for the suitcases and laptop. He took a deep breath, convinced the air smelled of Lambertville, memories, and triumph. He'd come a long way on the road back home, and he'd come in style.
Enjoy 3-chapter samples of all my audiobooks. Just go to markmcneese.com/listenlounge. You can listen to the entire audiobooks by finding them at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, various other audiobook retailers, or directly from my website,